Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Hey everyone, Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. So we have a Pittsburgher on with us, Jim Gibbs, who just recently is going to be giving me parking tickets in the city of Pittsburgh. I was safe in the city of Pittsburgh, but now he's got the city of Pittsburgh. So congratulations on that. He is the co-founder and CEO of Meter Feeder. And what a crazy thing to get into. So with that said, we're going to be talking about, he's co-founder since 2014. He's seen some ups, some downs, some in-betweens, has had probably all types of self-limiting beliefs, doubt, fear, and worry about how are we going to continue on. So we're going to be talking about how do we continue on in the face of that, and a whole bunch of stuff about grit. So with that said, Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So I guess the question number one is, yeah, okay, so what? So you've been a co-founder since 2014. Big deal. Why should we listen to you on this whole, you know, you have to have grit and determination to make a startup thrive?
That's funny. So I guess I have a little bit of a track record. So I started writing software in 1983, and I've been essentially building things ever since then. I took some time off in the mid 90s in order to, I decided I was going to go into high energy physics, and then realized that I would have to beg for money for the rest of my life. And then I decided I was going to go into medicine, and I realized I didn't like sick people. So I got back into software, went to Carnegie Mellon and did all of these wonderful things, and, you know, built out medical software to, you know, USA Today, when it was just like going from the blue globe to the blue dot, eventually helping to build a platform that handled about 30% of all the mobile retail sales in the US. Made it look easy. So I decided to build something for ourselves. And, you know, my co-founder and I, we've been writing software together for the past 21 years. Wow. And yeah.
Now, how in the world...
Go from software to business, like the CEO is definitely a treat.
But yeah, so let's get into that in a second, but I wanted to hit this. You said you've been coding since 83. You started school. Now, did you have some time off and then you went to Carnegie Mellon in 95, or was it?
Yeah, I definitely went to Carnegie Mellon in 95, but yeah, like, no, I was in first, second grade.
Like, yeah, because coding was not even a thing then. How in the world did you even get started there?
I went to see a movie called Tron in the theaters.
Okay.
And my mom was like, oh, he's a software developer. I was like, well, that's clearly what I want to be.
So the movie Tron sparked this. That's awesome. Okay,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
So you started coding in 83, and then you've built up through, you went through a couple of different paths. So how does that relate to startup land? Because I would think you tried a bunch of different things. And when you're in a startup mode, as a matter of fact, I just had this conversation a little earlier today, like the world is your oyster. I can go after everything. And oftentimes we need money so badly, we can try to boil the ocean. So how did you go from that, I'm not 100% sure, to, you know what, I'm going to start up Meter Feeder?
Oh man, startup Meter Feeder was a little bit, it was the wrong thing that pushed me into doing Meter Feeder, because I had, my co-founder and I, we just won a hackathon. We had $10,000, but we both had like high paying jobs. So we were like, you know, we're not, we'll do it, but not like do it. And then, yeah, then we got laid off.
Got it.
We were like, well, we got spare time now, so let's go ahead and make something. And yeah, that's how we ended up just going after it. You know, as soon as we were forced to start, you know, start the ticking time bomb.
Now, but how, okay, so you were in media, you were doing branding, media, I mean, you were in clothing with American Eagle Outfitters. How did you land on, of all things, going after the meter maid, right? So for parking tickets, for goodness sakes.
Sure. So I have a wife and five children.
So you're crazy like I am? Got it.
Yeah. The chance of me having spare change in my pockets is just about zero. So whenever I would see like a parking meter, I would say, okay, well, I'm just going to get a parking ticket. And, you know, if there's something that I've learned throughout my tenure as a software developer is you could probably write some sort of software to like make your day a little bit better. Right. So yeah, that's literally what it was. It was just like, okay, I need to build something so that I can just, you know, for example, pay for parking for my phone. And yeah, that's kind of the beginnings of the conversations.
Okay. And so you start, I guess, did you have that idea whenever you went into this contest, this hackathon?
Yeah. Well, the actual way that it happened, you know, that actually drew this out of our brains was, we were helping another associate with their startup, and we met with their potential salesperson, and they said, it was at the end of lunch and we were all chipping in, and she was like, oh yeah, let me chip in too. And instead of pulling out cash, she like pulled out this fat stack of parking tickets. And she's like, if you guys made an app, I would like pay for, I would use it every single day. Make an app to pay for parking, I would use it every day. And we kind of like looked at each other. We were like, yeah, cool. And then we went home and we talked, we spoke about it. And I was like, yeah, I also have this issue, this pain point. We just built on it from there.
Got it. Okay. So you identified that, and then walk us through, I mean, what's been the genesis? Because I mean, I've seen your name around the area for a while. And I mean, you've just, you know, share with everyone. You didn't say why we should listen to you. What was the latest award that you just got?
We actually just won the city of Pittsburgh. So, yeah, it's kind of funny because since we won Pittsburgh, we started deploying across New Jersey Transit. We just deployed Cedar Rapids with parking enforcement. We just got another parking operator in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We just got started in Latrobe. So, I mean, not Latrobe, Ligonier.
Ligonier.
We just got started in Ligonier. So
you'll get Latrobe next.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. But yeah, it's, you know, there's been a lot of things that have been happening in, say, the past 3 months.
Okay. Now, and then I thought you also won an award. That was what I was expecting to say there.
That's funny. I'm not sure of an award that I have won.
Son of a gun. I'll have to do my research on it. I thought I saw a news feed or something that you had won something. So disregard.
Well, I was going to say, like, there was another thing that we had gotten was we were selected by Google for the Black Founders Fund.
That's so the, wonder, the what, that's what I had noticed. So okay, I thought that was an award. So you were selected. So talk a little bit about that one.
Sure. So it's actually kind of funny because, you know, I consistently hear from folks that it's really hard to find good Black entrepreneurs to invest in. And it's just really weird because, you know, I get to hang out with this cohort. Like, so I'm just doing my thing, right? And one of my friends from, she runs a startup called Courtroom 5. She gets in contact with me. She's like, hey, just so you know, you won, like you've been selected to be in this cohort, Google's Black Founders Fund, Google's for Startups. They're giving you $100,000. And I was like,
sweet.
That's amazing, right? So not only did I knew a bunch of people who, you know, were also selected, but I met like all of these new amazing people who are just, you know, have very similar stories to me, right? And it's refreshing, it's encouraging, but at the same time, we could always use $100,000 from Google.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and that's pretty cool. So now one might say, hey, that sounds like this is an overnight success. Why don't you talk to us through those early years? I mean, did you go through funding, seed rounds? So walk us through this. I mean, as you're going through this journey, what did that look like for you?
Sure. So, I've definitely made a lot of startups over the decades, right? But yeah, as far as MeterFeeder is concerned, we tried really hard to get funding, like in the Pittsburgh region. And, you know, it never works. It never worked, right? Like even with every startup that I tried back in the day, is like, I always got the, you know, pat on the head, like, yeah, good job, Jim, you know? But like, I was never able to convert that to actual any commitments or any dollars. Of course, when people look at it, my previous business ideas, they're like, oh, well, we were dumb. Sorry about that. However, this time around, we just decided we were just going to go to Silicon Valley. And, you know, we actually went to Y Combinator. And that's when we had, you know, we just met all of these amazing people who were able to, you know, at a whim, just write a $50,000 check, right? It's like they write you a check and literally forget that they wrote you a check. You know, there was one check that we got. We were like, I told him, and this was the retort. He's like, I don't know. And I was like, come on, it's like a bad weekend in Vegas. And he was like, it is. Okay, here's the check. You know, I was like, this is crazy, right? So then I said, okay, cool. I'm going to take, we raised like in like 2 days, it was like $500,000. So then we went back to Pittsburgh. We were like, okay, we're going to move back to Pittsburgh and maybe raise the other 500,000 there. That did not work. You know, I figured, hey, we had so much success in such a short amount of time, we should be able to turn back around and, you know, do something similar at home where they're actually rooting for us, right? There's not as many success stories. Here's the great narrative that we can have in order to, you know, continue to build. But yeah, it's like we didn't raise another penny for like another year and a half.
Because I can see here that you have you've gone through 7 different investment rounds, the last one in 2020. So how did you end up having to go back there, or were you walk us through how you kept, you know, because you're constantly talking about whenever you're in startup and whether it's a SaaS organization or any entrepreneurial, right, is cash is king. And you're always looking at what's my available runway. So walk us through that. I mean, what lessons learned did you have as you're going down this runway and building up funding versus selling organically to raise the revenue?
Sure. So that's the thing. Normally people say, pay attention to one, right? And, you know, so I'm going to build a business or I'm going to go fundraise. But my thing is I need to keep the wheels on the bus, right? So the idea was I would be out and selling and hustling and, you know, going out to people, trying to pay up parking meters and be like, oh, hey, there's an app, right? I mean, it's like when you have like a 250-pound, 6'4" black man with dreadlocks down his back sprinting towards you like, no, don't put the quarter in the meter. You know, I realize what that looks like. But, you know, I had to put that on the shelf for a little bit, right? And say, okay, we need to like raise more money and hire more people. And, you know, whenever I would fix my gaze on raising more money, like the rest of the business just started to crumble. And, you know, it wasn't until I came to the conclusion, yes, there was a point in time where it was easier for me to raise revenue than raise capital, than raise money, right? So that's when I was just like, okay, clearly I'm going about this wrong. So we started growing. We had like pretty, you know, consistent month over month growth. And then I was like, can you guys keep the wheels on the bus? They were like, yeah, sure. cool. I'm going to raise a seed extension and I'm going to understand what my Series A is going to look like. When I understand what my Series A is going to look like, I can back my way in and say, you know, these are the milestones that we want to hit, like the revenue goals, the, you know, the GTV, all of that other good stuff before we raise our Series A, right? And, you know, being able to think that far forward before you go and raise any money at all, it was like completely different because now I could be like, you know, here's a bite-sized chunk of my business, right? I'm not saying, you know, this is how we're going to exit, right? Because that, the more I have to make people close their eyes and imagine what we're going to do, the less of a chance there is of me getting a check. So the fact that I was able to say, okay, in less than a year, these are the things that are going to happen. And, you know, people be like, I believe you. And then they would write a check. And I was like, this is so much better than, you know, just going out and essentially panhandling like I was a high energy physicist.
Now, so let's talk off of that. So I want to hit sales first, operations second, and then third thing is those milestones for your Series A and tying that back to long-term growth, long-term perspectives, right? So I'll hit number one. In those early days, who was the one selling and what did that sales team look like?
Yeah, it was me. It was me. I was selling. And the thing that was so awkward was, you know, if you remember the show Cheers, right? Like I was like Norm, right? I'd be walking into the parking authority and they'd be like, Jim, right? So yeah, it was just nonstop. So I just needed to sell all the municipalities that I could near me and continue that growth. So like, you always hear people quote Paul Graham, do things that don't scale. And yeah, that junk don't scale by going like door to door. So I'm selling, you know, we went to Brentwood, to Homestead, to Carnegie, and Dormont, and Aetna, and Swickley, and, you know, so we're getting all these small wins, but it's like, you know, the unit economics just didn't work. You know, so we definitely did need to start hiring. One of the mistakes I did make is, you know, thinking that hiring someone like they call it a coin operated salesperson. Yeah, like thinking that they would be able to go and have the same success or same passion that I did, it just wouldn't work, right?
I ended up never does, by the way.
What'd you say?
I said it never does, by the way.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where I put in more effort trying to guide that person than if I had just done it myself.
And, yeah. And that kind of ties into that operational bent too. So you were the one doing sales. It sounds like you were also the one doing the operations side of the business.
Yeah. So I did a lot of the operations and then we were able to start bringing in some of our friends, right? And our friends, you know, it's different, right? Because we have, you know, people from different walks of life, right? So I was able to hire one of my friends, Steve, that I met back in 2000. And he came on as our CFO. And he was helping us, you know, make sure that we know where every single penny was. Steve is the former CEO of PlantScape. So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, we were able to just bring somebody in who like made us real business people, right? So when they walked into the office, they weren't just like, oh, here's a bunch of like crazy rowdy kids. And, you know, we didn't have kegerators or anything like that. But, you know, people saw Steve and they felt a little bit comforted. So then Dan brought in his old roommate as the account manager. And, you know, he wasn't like a Steve, but he did graduate from clown school. So that was super fun, because whenever something got like really out of hand, like if there was like a customer who was mad at us, man, if he didn't just break that tension, like, I mean, just take a sledgehammer to that tension and just make it dissipate. So it was, yeah, he was awkwardly an amazing fit. So yeah, he was the one who started doing all of the training. He was the one who started doing all of the, you know, account management and things along those lines. So operationally, like actually getting stuff out to customers, that was all Elliot, the clown guy.
And so how did you go about moving from survival, we're just trying to get this thing going, to we need to build this to be able to your point, scale, where we can make this sure. Scale. When did that start to enter into your mindset?
I mean, like, because we're software developers, right? So from a software perspective, we were just like, you know, from the beginning, we were like, we don't know what we're doing. We need to build this in a way where we could just like start plugging things on, right? So as we see trends happening, we could just like write a module, plug it in. And once we saw, like, there was just this huge gap in the market, you know, someone who does both parking payments and parking enforcement. Then we see like, hey, fleets, you know, in New York City, delivery fleets are getting $100 million in parking tickets every year, right? Okay, that's a pretty big okay, let's make them have the ability to pay for parking by turning their cars off, right? So yeah, it's like we were able to do that. And then suddenly, once we got to that point, we were like, okay, let's focus on this. This is now officially our bread and butter. And we can just like get a landmark client and just start stamping out that success across the country. So yeah, once we got Pittsburgh, that was the moment where we were like, okay, we have a thing. And we can just essentially take that thing, take our learnings from what we learned in Pittsburgh, and just start stamping out that success across the country.
Yeah, because to kind of feedback maybe in a little different way is, it took you a while, you know, it's almost this homing in on what is the exact thing that we need to do. So whenever you're talking about, I wouldn't even call it product market fit. You knew there was a product market fit. But it gets to, all right, where's the best segment of this market to have best product market fit, to where then you can scale up. So how long did it take for you to really figure out, okay, we need fleets within X size of cities? Can you walk us through how you landed on that one?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the moment was, you know, because we were trying to sell fleets to cities for like since 2017. And it was almost like no one really understood what we were saying. And that kind of made things a little weird, right? If you got a chance to watch that movie, The Hudsucker Proxy, Tim Robbins, you know, he's walking around with a circle. He's like, you know, for the kids. And then all of a sudden, like, they're walking around with like hula hoops, right? So, you know, I'm walking around saying, hey, cars can pay for parking, all they have to do is turn them off. We got the situation, right? It wasn't until COVID started, and then suddenly 95% of all parking revenue just disappeared. Everybody was home, everybody was, you know, essentially just locked into their houses, and you know, not paying for parking because they're home. And then suddenly, you know, I was sitting there calling door to door like I do. And I was like, hey, have you noticed like delivery fleets? Have they started, you know, like, are they still on the road? Oh yeah. Like, are they still using parking? You're like, yeah, yes. Yes, they are. It's like, oh, okay. Are you charging them? No, we are not. It's like, you should probably be doing that.
That is a curious thing. Just a quick aside. Do cities want parking tickets because they make more money, or do they want payment for parking?
Great question. So I like to use Pittsburgh as an example, right? So in 2011, they were talking about putting these multi-space meters in where you could use your credit card. And some people were like, no, because tickets, we want people to pay tickets. So, I mean, at the time, like back then, I believe the numbers were somewhere like $7 million in parking payments and $700,000 in parking tickets. Parking tickets did go down for that first year in 2012. It went down to about $600,000. So they did lose about $100,000 in parking tickets, but parking payments went from $7 million to $12 million. So yes, they would rather people pay for parking. Everybody's happy at the end of the day.
Interesting. Okay. So you were able to figure that out. The problem came up of fleet parking and a new cash flow, cash flow into the coffers of the cities, which were desperately needed at that time. Now, to be a little bit combative here, how did you not see that or be able to get that messaging down earlier? Was it, how did you find out that, hey, this circle, the kids figured out is a hula hoop? Was it a messaging problem? Was it a targeting problem? Was it the messenger, which in this case is a 6'2" guy running down the street with dreads, right? What caused that problem, do you think?
Sure. I mean, I think it was because the messaging didn't really change, right? It was really just folks who were being receptive because, if you're in a boat and you're afraid of falling in the water, you don't rock the boat, right? So if I come in like highfalutin, rootin' tootin', like, here's my new technology. They're just like, cool. And that's the end of the conversation, right? So yeah, I mean, the narrative should have been able to, it should have made sense, right? I mean, like, for example, when I talk about my first startup, it was an app that enabled people to scan barcodes. Red light if you can't eat the food, green light if you can eat the food. And people said, who's going to use the internet on their phones? That's how come I couldn't find funding, right? So yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a timing issue, but at the same time, when you look back on it, you're just like, yeah, of course, that's a thing that we should have done. And this was the same thing, right? It's like, yes, we should have had something already in place, at least testing something out in order to, get that up and running. So we would quietly like deploy to places like Greensburg, Pennsylvania. So, we kind of stayed a little bit out of the limelight.
And so you got sales up and rolling, had the account manager, operations, you got a couple of talented people in there to allow you to do operations. And so was it at that point you felt as though you could go out and get funding, or was it even pre you building out this team?
Yeah, well, it was, we had gotten the contract for Pittsburgh, but there was like a lag in before we got started. I'm not sure exactly what was going on, but we were able to say, instead of close your eyes and imagine, we're going to be like deploying in Pittsburgh, or we're going to be signing the Pittsburgh contract. It was, hey, we got the Pittsburgh contract. We want to build out our team before we actually go live, right? We were able to get some really great investors to back us around that time. That was, folks like Mountain State Capital, Matt Harbaugh and Mike Green. They were able to say, okay, we're in now, we're going to help you think this through. And it was just really helpful to have those types of folks like in our corner, having us focus on the right thing at the right time.
So did you start finding that funding started to open up in Pittsburgh once you landed that, or?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Got it. So went to funding out in Silicon Valley, like you said, finally got it. And how long of a time was there between that first 500 whenever you finally landed the city of Pittsburgh?
Oh man. So that 500 was, that was around 2016. So we raised a couple checks in between there, you know, mainly for R&D. And so that what got us through like 2017, 2018, 2019. And then, 2020 came, 2020 came and we were able to start raising, I think we raised about $1.3 million last year.
And so when you were going out and getting those extra checks or the extensions, and you saw that runway running down, what gave you the solace that, you know what, we can make this work? How did you work your way through that? Because those are some scary times, because it's not just your baby that you've poured a heart and soul into. These are people's lives that you have, those that are working with you. And I don't think a lot of employees who haven't maybe had their own company or founded a company, they don't understand the weight that that puts on the employer.
Right. And it's funny. So one quick thing that I will say, I have five babies and I will never sell them. I will happily sell meter feet. But with that being said, I think that, people everybody who was working for us were able to understand, our financial situation. And additionally, what kind of stress that put on me, right? Because one of the things that I was saying, right, it was a very cause and effect, right? It was, you have my co-founder who's reading TechCrunch, who's just like, hey, this person had an idea and they got $5 million in funding, right? Jim, why don't you do that? I was like, it doesn't work that way, right? Like, I'm sure that he had that relationship before. And he was like, hey, I have this stupid idea. Can I have money? And they were like, yeah, sure. Right. That's how you end up with Juicero and Theranos and folks like that. I had to, it was a conversation where between my co-founder and I, where I was like, look, we're on the same team. Right. I mean, if I don't know if all of a sudden Mike Tomlin was looking at Ben Roethlisberger and he was just like, bro, man, when are you going to score? Like, I'm doing my best. Like, let's work together as a team, right? So it was that conversation where it was like he realized if he did this software, I could go out and sell it. The revenue would go up and I could make money. It was like a very cause and effect sort of thing that speaks to the software developer brain. And, we were able to, pull through those times. It got real hairy. Like, we did run out of money, right? But luckily, I'm with a woman who doesn't mind, hey, we need flour. Okay, cool. I'm going to go to my grain mill and mill some rice. So now you have some rice flour. There you go, right? So I had to drive Uber. Right. I had to do all these other extraneous things in order to make sure that we kept, a couple bucks. But that's essentially, everybody saw what I was doing. It's like I didn't hide it from them.
What kept you going instead of saying, screw this? Because my guess is even today, you could probably make more money somewhere else.
Yes, I can. Because there are literally people who literally work for our company who literally make more money than I do.
And people would go, what? A lot of people don't realize that. So what has you keep going, knowing that you're underpaid, overworked, stressed beyond the belief? Why are you insanely doing this?
Yeah. That's a great question. And luckily, I have a lot of practice having this exact conversation with my wife. But that's essentially the thing, right? It's IRR, right? It's like, we want to make sure, there's two things, right?
Well, so let's hit IRR because I don't think a lot of people know what that is. So when you hit IRR.
Sorry. Yeah. So how much money will I make per year, like over the years is, I guess, the best way to for me to think about it. So if I got
your internal rate of return, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I figure if we don't know the actual acronym, like might as well go a little bit into what it actually is, right? So if I'm making $100,000 a year, you know, if I make $20,000 a year and then all of a sudden I sell for $50 million, like that $100 million a year doesn't really mean too much, right? So yeah, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that, you know, early employees, investors, because good grief, we have some amazing investors and they like actually care about me and my well-being. You know, like Charles Hudson from Precursor Ventures and, you know, I was talking about Mountain State Capital and Innovation Works is in there too. Yeah, it's like, I feel not only the weight of being successful for my family, but all of those people and, you know, the next Black person that shows up that's been writing software for 38 years, like, I want him to get a chance too. I want that person to be able to say, hey, you know, we had a big win with Jim Gibbs. I'm going to give this person a shot as well. You know, so there is like, I mean, a multitudinous amount of pressure for success, but, you know, between all of the things that are piled up, like we're just in dire need of a success story.
But, and that's the thing that I find about most entrepreneurs is it's not just the money. I mean, we hope that we get there and there's that fantastical, right, exit. Of course. I mean, that is one of the reasons that we do this. However, could you imagine doing anything else?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't expecting you to say that. So you would be okay with a quote unquote 9-to-5.
I mean, well, my thing is like, I'm comfortable virtually anywhere. The only problem is I'm kind of unemployable, right? Because when I was working for, we'll just say a company, you know, there were certain things that we just needed to do. And I remember I was like, we need to do this. This is something that we need to do. And they were like, no, Jim, we're not going to do it. I was like, I will do it during my spare time. We need it. No, Jim. I was like, if you're afraid that I'll take your job, I will log in as you in GitHub and I will push the code as you go ahead and get all the accolades and all the adoration. Like, this just needs to be done. And we didn't do it. We got bit really hard and I just had to sit there and take my medicine, right? So yeah, there's just too much. There's too much that I want to be able to do in order to serve the team, in order for, you know, regular 9-to-5, you know, middle managers to be comfortable with that.
Yeah. And that's kind of the idea that, you know, it's really others focused and for you to be able to do that. I mean, that's, we have to, I think in this time that we need, the market's changed. I think almost everywhere, anybody's going to have to be that problem solver, others focus kind of thing to get this up and rolling. And I think it's really good to hear off of that piece. So my goodness, I could, you know, time is going by super, super fast here. So let me hit some real topics. I mean, when you look at people, the biggest challenges that you would say that you find other startups are making or other people that are faced with these unbelievably stressful situations. What are the biggest mistakes that you see them making or maybe you've made in the past that you could give us some advice on?
Sure. Sleep, drink water, keep your brain nourished because it is really important and you only have one, right? You know, I don't know what it is with like the human psyche that causes us to do things that hurt our brains whenever we're stressed, right? Like, I'm going to stay up for 5 days straight and just work. It's like, no, that's terrible for your brain. You're just going to continue to make terrible mistakes. You know, I'm going to go out and bombard my brain with all of these chemicals so that I can, no, you, like, you need to have clarity. Sit down, think about what you're doing, right? And, you know, it's bizarre because it's like, as soon as I had money, I was like, oh, let me go to sleep. I slept, I woke up, and I was like, man, look at all these raw materials. I'm going to put this together. There you go. And then we're successful, right? So, I mean, I did it myself. I stayed up for days at a time trying to get stuff out the door. And, you know, like, yeah, it just doesn't work. And, you know, between that and making sure that you speak to your customer or your potential customer and make sure you're making something that they actually want. Those are like the two biggest things that, you know, biggest superpowers.
Got it. And that leads us to a next one is, what resources might you recommend? Because it seems like you might be doing a little bit of Eric Ries's Lean Startup or some Steve Blank's, you know, that product market fit kind of thing. So sure. Resources that you might recommend out there?
I would say, actually, yeah, depending on your stage, it would be the MOM test. Like if you're just getting started, the MOM test is probably the spot that you want to start with. Because for folks who aren't familiar, you know, your mom's willing to lie to you because she loves you. So if you're like, hey, I was thinking about making a cookbook for the iPad and sell $30 for, how often do you use your cookbook? It's like, well, I don't have a cookbook, but if you had made one for my iPad, of course I would spend $30 for, you know. Really, you know, so, you know, like, let me build this house sweater. Like, what? It costs $1 million. All I need to do is sell one. I'm going to be a millionaire, right? It's like, no one's going to buy your house sweater. So
check the product market fit and don't ask your mom.
Don't ask your mom. Don't accept compliments. The only compliment that you're allowed to take essentially is in the form of a check.
Yeah, exactly. That cashes and doesn't bounce. All right, got it. And then how about as you've been building up, a hack that you might give around hiring talented people, or is it sales that you think is your really sweet spot, or maybe scaling up the business? A hack that you might have on that one of those three?
Yeah, so we've been really lucky because, you know, the hack we did was kind of long-term, and it wasn't really a hack. It was just like, we found out later that we were just doing the right thing, right? All the places that I worked, people just liked working with me. So as soon as I said, hey, I'm hiring, do you know anybody? They're like, me? I'm like, oh, great, right? So yeah, one, don't be a jerk at where you're working. Two, yeah, talk to people. And let them know, you know, don't be afraid to like let people know, like, hey, I'm specifically looking for this type of person. I know that you're good at this. Do you know somebody that can, like, you know, you would sign off on in order to come to my organization? Sometimes they'll be like, this person right here. Other times they might be like, no need to look any further. I'll do it.
So really keep up with your network and, you know, treat people the way that you would want to be treated kind of deal.
Yeah, go figure, right?
Yeah, crazy idea. All right, cool. Now, how about if, future trends that you might see coming down the pike? Ones that like have you nervous to death, and other ones you're like, oh, sweet, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the parking world, yeah.
Or any world, right?
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, it's like, so, in the parking world, I'm just like, yay, cars, you know, like Elon Musk and Tesla has the summon feature. Eventually, they're going to have the dismiss feature, right? They got to pay for parking somehow. So that, I'm like, yay, right? But one of the trends that I continue to see is like every year, there's a different trend, right? So like 2016, it was drones, and 2017, it was AR, VR, and 2018, it was scooters, and 2019, you know, so on and so forth. So now it's, you know, Web3 blockchain, I mean, Web3 NFTs and stuff like that, right? So that's probably going to die off in a couple months, but there's going to be a different technology that, you know, rather than sharing JPEGs, it's going to be something better. Like it's going to actually have some sort of use beyond saying that this piece of art is mine. And I'm not quite sure what it is. I'm not like really biting my teeth about it, right? But I am very interested to see where this goes and how I could be a part of it.
Nice. So finding out how to be relevant in the continuous onslaught of change.
Absolutely.
All right. Cool. Well, hey, listen, Jim, it's been a lot of fun and I can't thank you enough for your time here. I guess who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why in the world should somebody reach out to you, I guess?
That's funny. So if you want to start something and you're not sure where to start, you can feel free to reach out to me. I'll probably, you know, just remember three sentences. One, like, hey, how you doing? Two, background. The second sentence is a background on why you're getting in contact with me. Three is the question that you would like for me to answer, and then I will answer your question. That's how you get a response from me. So if it's as far as that, go for it. If you're looking to invest in the future of mobility and you missed out on the autonomous vehicles and things along those lines, people spend $200 billion in parking payments and parking tickets. So feel free to reach out to me about that. I am not soliciting for investment personally. So SEC, you can't get me on that. But I will say, you know, there's a lot of things that are currently going on that I can help, you know, get that together. But, you know, and then of course, if you have a fleet and you get parking tickets, you can always get in contact with me and I can help you with that.
Nice. Love it. And I love the SEC compliance segment. That's perfect. I love it. All right. Well, hey, it's been a lot of fun, Jim. I can't thank you enough. You know, when you're facing these challenges, I guess that would be one last parting thought here, Jim. When you were facing those challenges and wondering, what should I do? Should I, you know, have my wife make the stuff and figure things out or keep going? What was that one thing that you clung to keep going?
Yeah, it wasn't one thing. It's just the culmination of essentially my life, right? It's like my parents sent me to New York Tech back in 83, right? That's, I want to give them a return on investment, right? Maybe not quite the IRR that they were looking for, but you know, I need to give them something. You know, all the way from back then and just all the support that I've gotten, you know, it's just to be that success story that so many people have been looking for.
Nice. So clung to that internal drive of what motivates you. And it sounds like one of gratitude. So I love the gratitude motivation. So pretty cool stuff. So, hey, go out there, figure out what your one thing is, right? If it's gratitude, if it's giving back to others, or if it's a couple of different things that come to a culmination, cling on to that and, don't back off, right? Just keep getting after it. It will get better. And even if it's a colossal failure, you won't die, right? You'll learn, it'll hurt. And the cool thing is those lessons you can take to the next spot and be even better. So keep after it, everyone. Hey, remember, knowledge for knowledge sake is pointless. Get after it and apply some of these knowledge. So Jim, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.